This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
There's no Sheilas Shalom on Tisha B'Av, but I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge the presence of so many of my chaverim, and all I could say, hopefully, next year in Yerushalayim. Tisha B'Av is the most wretched day on our calendar. Such a miserable day that Yirmiyah HaNavi, who was born on Tisha B'Av, cursed the day of his birth. From time immemorial, Tisha B'Av is the most tragic day for Klal Yisrael. The Mishnah says at the end of Masechta Tainis and Av Chavav Amud Beis, the Mishnah tells us five major tragedies all befell Klal Yisrael on Tisha B'Av. From the very first Tisha B'Av in history, from the time the Meraglim came back with their frightening report about Eretz Yisrael, and the Pasuk says, Vayivku ha'am ba'layla ha'hu, Klal Yisrael cried bitterly on that night. And Chazal tell us, Ribon Shalom looks down from Shamayim and he says, why are you crying? I told you, Toiva ha'aretz ma'oid ma'oid. I told you it was a very good land. Why are you crying? Atem b'chisam b'chiyo shalchinam. Vani koivei alachem b'chiyo l'doirois. You cried for nothing. I will give you good reason to cry on this night. The Mishnah continues, the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed on Tisha B'Av. The second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed on Tisha B'Av. The city of Beitar. City of Beitar was captured on Tisha B'Av. Turnus Rufus plows the city of Yerushalayim on Tisha B'Av. The prophet Yirmiyah had good reason to curse this wretched day. Throughout history, Tisha B'Av has been like a lightning rod of Jewish tragedy. The city of Alexandria, which was even greater than Beitar, was destroyed on Tisha B'Av. England, the Jewish community of England, was expelled on Tisha B'Av. In the year 1295, so I want to tell you an important fact that you need to know. If you want to convert a secular date into a Jewish date, you add the year 1240. The Jewish community of France was expelled in the year Kaleh, Kaf Lamed He. Kaf Lamed He is the year 55. You add 1240 in the year 1295. World War I began on Tisha B'Av. I remember when I was a kid, it was a week before my bar mitzvah. It was a year like this year, where Tisha B'Av fell out on Shabbos. My bar mitzvah was going to be the next week, Parshas Vaschanan, the Aguda Avenue L. And I'm walking to shul, Shabbos morning, Tisha B'Av morning, about a block away, I look at the shul. The shul was not there anymore. It had burnt down on Tisha B'Av. Throughout history, when something bad has to happen, it happens on Tisha B'Av. But likely, the worst tragedy since the Churban Beis HaMikdash was the Gerushei Sfarad, the Spanish Inquisition. Already from the times of the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, when the Jews were exiled from Babel, many Jews made their way to Europe. Many Jews made their way to Spain. And after the end of the 70 years of Galus Babel, Ezra comes back to Yerushalayim. And he calls, he makes a big declaration. He says, Klal Yisrael, return, return. Return from Europe. Most Jews did not return. Most Jews remained in Babel. Many Jews remained in Europe. Many Jews remained in Spain. And upon the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, many more Jews came to Spain. So you have in Spain these two groups of Jews. You have Jews who made their way there after Churban Bayis Rishon. You had Jews who made their way there from Churban Bayis Sheni. For 1400 years, Spain was the major epicenter of Torah Jewry, especially from the time of the 10th century. Upon the decline of the great Torah academies in Babel, Sura and Pompadisa, the center of Torah in the world was Spain. Now I want to point out something, a little bit of a historical myth. I'm sure everybody has heard there's something called the Golden Age of Spain. Loi haya v'loi nivra. There never was the Golden Age of Spain. Jewish history in Spain was replete with massacres, pogroms, murder, public burning. If you lived in Spain, you lived with smoke over your head from Jews burning. The golden age of Spain was a farce. It was a scam. There was about a 200-year window where the Jewish people had a degree of respite. But for the vast majority of 1,400 years, Jews were murdered, tortured, persecuted. Ironically, the only respite Klal Yisrael had in Spain was when the Mohammedans took over. But while Spain was under Christian rule, it was one Holocaust after the other. So the question is, why is it called the Golden Age of Spain? Rabbi Leo Kitov writes that this is a classic Jewish phenomenon, where we look back at history, we look back longingly at imaginary good times, as if things were good, like we did in Mitzrayim. The Pasuk says, Dacharnu es hadaga. Oh, Mitzrayim was so wonderful. Remember the cucumbers, remember the fish. Mitzrayim was a Holocaust. They threw our babies in the Nile. They built them into the walls. 80% of Klal Yisrael perished. Why did we look back longingly? Rabbi Isai, this is classic Jewish phenomenon, to imagine the times that never happened. Now, we may know a lot of information about the Spanish Inquisition, but probably most of it comes from secular sources. What I'd like to present to you this morning is what is considered the most authentic, comprehensive, first-hand account of the Spanish Inquisition that is presented to us by one of the great Jewish leaders who lived in the time, none other than Don Yitzchak Abarbanel, the Abarbanel, who lived from 1438 to 1508. Many think of the Abarbanel only as a commentator on Chumash. The Abarbanel was actually a member, was actually part of the chain of the Mesoira of Halacha. So for instance, the Beis Yosef in Siman Kuf Samaches refers to the Abarbanel as the Hanesher HaGadol, the great eagle, not just the leader of Klal Yisrael, but part of the chain of Halachic Mesoira. The Abarbanel was a prolific writer. The Abarbanel wrote a commentary on the Mor Nevuchim. He wrote something called Moira Rosh Amona. He wrote a Haggadah called Zevach Pesach. He wrote a trilogy on the coming of Mashiach called Mayone HaYeshua. But of course, his magnum opus was his commentary on Tanakh. The Abarbanel begins his career in Portugal, where he's the advisor of King Alfonso of Portugal, who the Abarbanel refers to as a righteous leader, as a righteous ruler. But in 1481, Alfonso died. And he was succeeded by his son, Wao. Wao spelled J-O-A-O, with a little zarka on the A. Wao executes almost all of his father's officers. They're falsely accused of treason. The Abarbanel is then summoned to the king's palace under the pretext that King Alfonso wants to ask his advice. But the Abarbanel is told Alfonso does not want to ask advice. Alfonso wants to chop his head off. Abarbanel flees immediately with the pursuers at his back. He makes it out of the border of Portugal, literally with the pursuers seconds behind him. He arrives in Spain penniless, no money, nothing. Complete anonymity. Nobody knew who he was, which is always a good thing for a rabbi. He arrives in Toledo, and now he has time. He begins to write his parish on Tanakh. He writes on Yehoshua, on Shoiftim, on Shmuel. But it's not long until his talents are discovered, and he's summoned by King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella, and he's promoted to be the finance minister of Spain. And in that capacity, in a few short years, he raises Spain up to become the financial superpower in the world. Now you have to know what was going on in the world at the time. In the year 711, the Arabs attacked the Iberian Peninsula, took over much of the Iberian Peninsula. Ferdinand and Isabella had a great ambition. Their ambition was called Reconquista, where they wanted to take over and reconquer the entire Iberian Peninsula. And they began their ambition. In the year 1487, Malaga falls to Christian hands. There is now one Arab stronghold left for Christianity to take hold of the entire Iberian Peninsula. And then comes the year, the ominous year, 1492. January 2nd, 1492. King Ferdinand, Queen Isabella, they won what is considered one of the greatest all-time military victories. The victory of Granada. Ferdinand and Isabella, they attack Granada. They conquer Granada. The Iberian Peninsula now falls entirely into Christian hands. This is considered one of the most strategic victories in military history. Says Abarbanel, this arrogant king now comes back from victory. And he's thinking to himself, he needs to show gratitude to the newly embraced religion of Christianity in the Iberian Peninsula. And this wicked king says to himself, says Abarbanel, Vayomer Esav Beliboy, Bamaes Rotza Leloikai. Esav says in his heart, how could I appease my God? The only way is to gather all of those miserable Jews, all of those wretched Jews who walk in darkness. And I'm going to gather them together and force them to embrace the true religion. And if they don't, I will banish them from the Iberian Peninsula. Says Abarbanel, Yotza dvar malchus vedasoi, like the dust of Paras and Madai. And it occurred in the ominous year 1492. If I could please beg your indulgence. If someone has an emergency, they need to use a phone, please step outside. Please do not use the phone inside during Kenneth. Thank you. Says Abarbanel, this occurs in the year 1492. Now, interestingly, many Achronim find a remez to the year 1492 in Tanakh. They understand that the year 1492 somehow is predestined for Jewish tragedy. The Abarbanel says the year 1492 is Merumas in the Pasuk, Mizore Yisrael Akabtsenu, the scattered sheep of Israel. I will gather in Mizore, the scattered one. Mizore is Gematria 252. Remember the formula. You add 1240, 1492. There's a Sefer Tzemach David. Tzemach David was written by Rav David Ganz. Rav David Ganz was a Talmud of the Ramah. Very interestingly, Rav David Ganz, as a young boy, walked from Germany to Krakow. He walked from Germany to Krakow. Why did he walk so far? That's hundreds of miles. He had a tshuka to learn from the Ramah. If you have to learn from someone, you have to go to a shir. Distance is not a factor. He walked from Germany to Krakow. The Ramah saw that Rav David Ganz had a cheshek, had a tshuka for history. He encouraged the Tzemach David to write a work on history. Tzemach David was considered one of the greatest astronomers of the time. Tzemach David, we have correspondence between the Tzemach David and Tycho Brahe and Johann Kepler. He was considered one of the greatest astronomers of the time. The Tzemach David finds a remez to the year 1492 in the Pasuk, Rabim b'nei shoymema, Rabim gematria 252. That's the year, again, 1492, you add 1240. Another remez. One of the Gerushei Sfarad, one of the great Gerushei Sfarad, one of the great Gedolim, Rav Yosef Yaivitz, no relation to Rav Yaakov Emden. Yaivitz stands for Yitain Eitza Be'es Tzara. Rav Yosef Yaivitz wrote a sefer on the reasons that he believed why the Spanish Jewry was being punished. Amazingly, the last person you would expect to write Hagois on a philosophical work of a Spanish scholar would be the Bnei Yisachar, Rav Tzvi Elimelech Medinov. And lo and behold, the Bnei Yisachar wrote Hagois on the Sefer or Achayim. The Bnei Yisachar finds a remez to the year 1492 in the Pasuk in Daniel, Biron Yachad Koichve Boiker. The word Biron is Gematria 252, that's the year 1492. Says Abarbanel, the decree went forth that any Jew who would not accept the Christian faith would be banished from Spain in the year 1492. They were given 3 months. The decree would take place in the ominous month of Av. Says Abarbanel, this is the meaning of the Pasuk, Ata Yoichleim Chodesh Eschelkeim. Now the month of Av will destroy the remnant. The month that destroyed the majority of Klal Yisrael during the times of Bayis Rishon. The month that destroyed the remnant of Klal Yisrael during Bayis Sheni. That month would obliterate whatever members of Klal Yisrael were left during the Spanish Inquisition. Says Abarbanel, the dagger in the heart was the date that was set for the expulsion. It was Thursday, August 2nd, 1492. Tisha B'Av was the date selected for the expulsion from Spain. Writes the Abarbanel, did King Ferdinand know about Tisha B'Av? V'hu lo yada mizeh hazman davar. He didn't know anything about Tisha B'Av. He never heard of Tisha B'Av. He didn't know what Tisha B'Av was. So why did he schedule it for Tisha B'Av? Ke'ilu min hashamayim hidrichu l'hagbolas hazman hazeh. It was as if he was heavenly directed to pick the day of Tisha B'Av. Says Abarbanel, I was sitting in the palace. I couldn't keep my mouth closed. Says Abarbanel, I risked my life. I screamed with every fiber of my being to the king, what are you doing? What do you have against these people? Why do you want them out? Do you want money? I'll pay you a hefty sum for every Jew. Money's not an issue. And the Abarbanel writes that he shook Ferdinand up. I pleaded with the officers. I pleaded with the officials. Says Abarbanel, on the last day before the signing of the edict, Ferdinand was about to retract. But at that moment, the great and terrible inquisitor, Torquemada, Thomas D. Torquemada, came running into the room, ranting and raving, waving a cross. He shook Ferdinand and Isabella to the core. They were so frightened, they were so scared, they asked Abarbanel to step out. The edict was signed, and it went into effect. Thursday, August 2nd, Tisha B'Av. By the way, writes Abarbanel, as bad as Ferdinand was, it was the Marshas, it was the Mamzeres Isabella. She was the Satan. She was sitting at his side. V'hasatan oimedes liminoi l'sitnoi. By the way, Torquemada, before he was promoted to be the Grand Inquisitor, he was the chief confessor of the Inquisition, which means they would take a person, they would tie him to a wooden plank, they would tie their arms up, they would stretch the person out, take nails, stick it under their toenails and fingernails, and say, either admit you're a Christian or we're going to torture you to death. This was all under the auspices of Torquemada. 1483, he's appointed the Grand Inquisitor. Within a few years, Spanish Inquisition already tortured 30,000 Yidden. When you walked through the streets of Spain, all you heard was screaming and crying from torture victims. Every street corner had a fire, P-Y-R-E, a pyre, where the smoke of human bodies were burning throughout Spain. Over the Iberian Peninsula, there was a gray cloud of smoke from bodies burning. Says Abarbanel, since Golos Yerushalayim, we never had such a tragedy. 300,000 Jews left Spain, says Abarbanel, and I among them. I was given exclusive rights to remain the sole remaining practicing Jew in Spain. But instead, I chose to go into exile with my brethren. And as we were leaving, says Abarbanel, there was one thing that comforted us. V'yotza malkam lefnehem v'ashem b'roisham. We felt the presence of the Shekhinah escorting us out of Spain. And where did we go? Nobody knew where they were going. Some went to Portugal. Some went to Navarre. We were suffering. We were broken. We were hungry. Many took ships. Many of the ships sunk. Many were capsized, says Abarbanel. I myself ended up in Naples. Abarbanel comes to Naples in the year 1493, the year Gerim Hayisem Ba'aretz. The word Gerim, Begematria, 253. You add 1240, 1493. One of the greatest works of Jewish history, the Seder Hadorois, Rabbi Chil Halpern. I once met somebody who was a descendant of the Seder Hadorois. Seder Hadorois is such an important historical work The Chida himself wrote footnotes on the Seder Hadoros. Seder Hadoros records just one of the most heart-wrenching stories you'll ever hear. There was one particular person who fled by boat with his aged father and his young son. The father, the grandfather, is dying of starvation. They don't know what to do. He takes his father to the baker. He says, "Baker, you have bread for my father." Baker said, "No, I don't give Jews bread." The man takes his son. He says, "Here." He trades in his son for a loaf of bread to be able to feed his ailing father. He takes the bread back to his father, comes back. The father was already in the next world. Takes the piece of bread back to the baker. He says, "Baker, could I please have my son back?" He said, "No thanks. Keep the bread." Terrible thing. Says Abarbanel, "Since Golos Yerushalayim, we never had such a tragedy." Marav Rabbeisai, I've been thinking about this for quite a while. Here we are. It's Tisha B'Av. We're all here. We're not eating. We're not drinking. We've all come to cry. To cry for the Churban Beis HaMikdash, and to cry for all the tragedies that have happened throughout our long, difficult galus. We're going to say Kina Nonal Chaf Aleph, Kina Chaf Aleph Arzei Levanoin, about the Asara Haruge Malchus. They didn't even happen on Tisha B'Av. Kina Chaf He, Kina Lamed Gimel, the Gezerois Tatnu, the Crusades. They didn't even happen on Tisha B'Av. Kina Mem Aleph, Shali Srufa Ba'esh, the burning of the Svarim in France in 1242. Didn't even happen on Tisha B'Av. We say kinnis for the Holocaust. Didn't happen on Tisha B'Av. But we all recognize that all Jewish misfortune is traced back to Churban Beis HaMikdash. Isn't there something that is so glaringly and conspicuously absent from the kinnis? What happened to the tragedy that the Abarbanel writes is the single worst tragedy that ever happened to Klal Yisrael since Churban Beis HaMikdash? Why is there not one word in our liturgy about the Spanish Inquisition? The whole Tisha B'Av goes by. You talk about the Crusades, the Asara Haruge Malchus, the Holocaust. They didn't even happen on Tisha B'Av. And the tragedy that the Abarbanel writes was B'Hashkacha Pratis on Tisha B'Av. It happened today. And we don't mention one word about the Spanish Inquisition. I guarantee you, it wasn't a coincidence that it happened on Tisha B'Av. And not one word is mentioned. Rabbeisai, are we missing something? The single greatest tragedy in the last 2,000 years is omitted. And I've been thinking about this for quite a while. There must be a very fundamental reason why we don't mention the terrible tragedy of the Spanish Inquisition. I want to share with you a historical fact. As 300,000 Yidden are leaving Spain in the year 1492, the Gedolei Yisrael, the Abarbanel among them, paskind as a Hoira Hashah that they should have bands and orchestral music played for those Jews who were being exiled. On Tisha B'Av. It's an Isser. How are they allowed to do that? There were three reasons. Number one, it was Pikuach Nefashos, to boost their spirits, to encourage them, to infuse the exiles with hope and bitachon that Hashem was with them. The second reason, it was Hakaras HaToiv to Hashem, that they weren't Nichshol like so many hundreds of thousands were. You know, in 1391, 101 years earlier, hundreds of thousands of Jews converted to Christianity in the first time in our history. But the third reason, and perhaps the most important reason, was to teach Klal Yisrael. We never cry when we leave Golos. We only cry when we leave Yerushalayim. Yes, it was very tragic. It was devastating. 300,000 Yidden, homeless, evicted from the country where they flourished. But they never belonged in Spain. They weren't leaving home. They were leaving Golos. And a Yid does not belong in Golos. And you don't cry when you leave Golos because you're never attached to it in the first place. Rabbi Yechiel Halpern, the author of the Seder HaDoros, writes one of the most frightening comments in his entry to the year 1620. In the years after the Crusades, the Sma, the author of the Sma, the author of the Drisha, the author of the Prisha, the Sefer Mir Sinaim, was asked, of all the congregations in Europe, the one that was devastated the worst was the community of Varmaiza, Worms. Why? Why were they punished the most severely? Says the Sma, that after the 70 years of Golos, Ezra sent a message to the community in Worms. Ezra sent, we're going back to rebuild Yerushalayim. Why don't you join us? And you know what they responded? The complacent Jews of Worms responded, you stay where you are in your great Yerushalayim. We will stay where we are in our small Yerushalayim. They were too comfortable in Golos. That's why they were decimated. Rabbi Avram Saba was one of the greatest gedolim in Spain. He writes, in his opinion, the reason for the Spanish Inquisition was a frightening thing that should shake us to the core. Says the Tzor Hamor, Hagaiva v'hasrara shahoysa b'Yisrael. It was their arrogance. Arrogance? In what way were they arrogant? Says Rabbi Avram Saba, their houses were too big. They were too fancy. They spent too much money on it. I'll read to you his words. Hayu yoshvim be'artzam, shehayu boinim charavois lomoi, batim sfurim be'erez uvesichiyos hachemda. They were under the illusion that they would be there forever. So why not? Live it up. That's why they were destroyed. What's the chate? What's the chate? The Yibar Shalom blessed you. What else are you going to use it for? The chate is getting comfortable. And I believe very firmly that the reason why there is no kinna for the Spanish Inquisition is because as painful as it was and as difficult as it was, we don't cry when we leave Golos. We only cry when we leave Yerushalayim. This is the lesson of the downfall of Spanish Jewry. As successful as you are, as affluent as you are, don't get too comfortable. Because we don't belong here. And we're not going to be here forever. As grandiose an age as the Golden Age of Spain and whatever you read, never in the history of Klal Yisrael were we ever more comfortable in Golos than in America today. You want to know just how comfortable we are in this golden Medina? Just look at the contemporary Jewish scene today. 70% of Jews who are getting married are marrying Goyim. That's how comfortable we are. And even among unsere heimische Yidden, as they say, we build our homes and we drive our cars like we're going to be in this country forever. And I hate to break it to you, it's not the reality. America is the last stop. Rav Chaim Volozhiner, who is the father of the concept of yeshiva, primary disciple of the Vilna Gaon, who was once a shachris, in the yeshiva, in the middle of the yeshiva, in the middle of shachris, all of a sudden the Talmidim hear a heart-wrenching wailing. And they look around and it's coming from none other than Rav Chaim Volozhiner. Rav Chaim runs out of the davening immediately after and he goes into his private study and everybody wants to know, why was the Rosh Hashiva crying? What happened? So they appointed Rav David Tevel. Rav David Tevel was the primary disciple of Chaim Volozhiner, the Nachlas David. Please go ask the Rebbe. Rebbe, why were you crying? The Nachas David goes into Rav Chaim, his voice is quivering. He says, Rebbe, you know, the whole yeshiva is crying, the whole yeshiva is moved. What happened? What happened? And Rav Chaim was reluctant to say, but he felt that since he broke out in front of the whole yeshiva, it was a message from Shamayim that he needs to reveal to his Talmidim, the vision that he had. Reb Chaim turns to the Nachas David. He says, "Mein Taira Talmud, the day will come when the pillars of European Jewry will topple and the yeshivas in Europe will be destroyed and decimated. But there will be one more stop before Mashiach comes." We're talking 200 years ago. The last stop will be America. The final and tenth galus of Torah will be America. Babel, North Africa, Egypt, Italy, Spain, France, Germany, Poland, Lithuania, America. Rav Aaron Cutler writes in the Mishnah of Aaron, this is not a legend. This is an authentic Messiah that we have. Ha-Tachaniya Ha-Achroina Tia America. So here we are. We're at the last stop. Nobody knows how much longer we're going to be here. We hope we could be here b'shalom until the stop is over. But the verdict of history is, we're lucky if we get out of a galus with a shirt on our back. In fact, it usually doesn't happen. And if there's one thing we could learn from the omission of Spanish Jewry in the Kinnis book, you have 45 Kinnis on Tisha B'Av, not a word about Spanish Jewry. If there's one thing that we learn, is that we don't get attached to Galus. We don't cry when we leave Galus, because we don't belong in Galus. We didn't belong in Spain, we didn't belong in North Africa, we didn't belong in Poland, we didn't belong in Hungary, and we don't belong in America. Are we alive? Are we breathing? Since I'm a kid, every decade, another 100,000 Jews, the Ribon Shem picks up and brings back to Eretz Yisrael. We're living in a time when we see that every nevuah of every Navi is coming true before our eyes. When I was a kid, all of a sudden, people on my block were having Iranians in their basement. The Jews of Persia, they all came to Eretz Yisrael or America. Then it was the Russians. Few months ago, we see how the Ribon Shem is taking French Jewry, bringing them to Eretz Yisrael. Where do you think we are on the list? There are not too many countries left. Just a couple. And don't forget, when they left Spain, they left triumphantly. They realized we don't cry when we leave Galus. Meretz Hashem, when the Ribon Shem takes us out of America as well, we hope fervently that this last stop won't last too much longer. May this be the very last Tisha B'Av. May we all be zoicha to go up to Yerushalayim together. מתוך שמחה, סחזנו עינינו, בשובך לציון, ברחמים, ויעסקו על צדק, בניין בית המקדש מהר וימינו, אמן.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.